Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 62 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we have the first part of our Crufts coverage, including interviews with actor Neil Morrissey about why he is supporting the Pedigree adoption drive.
I'm doing it because I adopted a dog myself, you know, and I genuinely wanted to give a dog a second crack of the whip.
And it's me, or the dog presenter and trainer extraordinaire, Victoria Stilwell, about Crufts.
Everything you want to know about a dog is right here. Everything you want to get your dog is right here. And even if you don't have a dog, come and learn about a breed if you're interested about getting a dog. Yeah. It's the place to be.
Plus, we have the Dogcast Radio news, and I'll be considering why we get so attached to specific breeds. In honour of today's guest, our quotes between features are all about Border Collies, because in this show, we're talking to dog trainer and shepherd Graham Sims, who is able to work up to 9 Border Collies simultaneously. Graham has amazed crowds all over the UK with the displays he and his dogs have put on, as well as visiting the US several times to lecture about his experience and knowledge. Graham has been a guest on Dogcast Radio before, in episode 29, and you may remember that he works each of his dogs in a different language, one in Welsh, another in German, another in French, and so on. As well as his dog training achievements, Graham is an extremely talented artist. He's an award-winning children's book illustrator and was also a vicar in the Church of England. In this interview, we talked about his new book, The Dog Whisperer, How to Train Your Dog Using Its Own Language. It sounds great. So just what's in the book?
I guess there's an attitude in the first place. One of my granddaughters, wishing to score points, said to me, "What's the secret of dog training, Grandad?" And I said, "There isn't a secret," but I thought about what she said. And there is a secret. It's love them so much that they can't resist you. That's the secret. So that's speaking dog. My father said to me when I was 17, "You're the most stupid boy I've ever met in my life." His voice said it, but more damaging was the fact that his face said it too. And it was because I couldn't work out how many penny halfpennies there were in the old shilling instantly. Everybody else in the world could, I couldn't. So I was the most stupid boy. It damaged me and made me underperform for 10 years until I went into the advertising industry and I found that on abstract things I was better than anybody else. So I wasn't stupid. What he should have said was, "I notice your intelligence is different to mine." This is what this book is about. Notice your dog's intelligence is different to yours. And that's it. Yeah. A lady said to me in Devon, she said, this was a tourist, she said, "Those sheep are remarkably stupid." And I said, she said, "Are they stupid?" And I said, "No, they're not stupid. They're the best animals in the whole wide world at being sheep. So it's an applied intelligence. And dogs are the best animals in the world at being dogs. So don't treat them as an inferior or a slave or something you're going to give instructions to. Treat them as a partner. Show you love them. And they'll start talking to you in an uninhibited way, and you'll understand what they're saying to you." And it's about that.
Yeah.
You said something that made me think something that I've not realised before, because you know they always say, when you're calling your dog back, even if you're really angry with the dog, you sort of have to say, "Come here," and not show. And it's something I do with my dog, "Come here, little swine," and I say it in a nice tone. And I say, but what I've completely forgotten until you've just said that is, if my body language is saying, "Because I'm really actually very cross with you," and I'm saying, thinking, "I'm doing a nice tone of voice, why aren't you coming back?" But he's got me, hasn't he? He knows exactly what I'm saying to him.
Last time, did we talk about the woman who's in the park and she shouts to her dog, "Come off the roses"?
No.
No, come off what? The dog says Floribunda, actually, not, and they've got green fly. No, he doesn't know what a rosebed is. And she chases after him, shouting, "Come back, come back, come back." She thinks that's eminently clear. I am chasing my dog. I am shouting, "Come back." The dog sees it as she must love this game because she's barking. And she's still playing because she's running with me. I shall run some more. And it's a case of bridging that chasm between a dog's understanding and yours. And that book tries to do that. I think I say in there, I spent 20 years trying to speak dog, and I've managed it. And then I put in brackets, not fluently, of course, but I have managed it, and I understand what most of the things they're saying to you are. For instance, little subtleties. A dog looking at you with his mouth open and his tail up in the air is saying, I love this game, let's have some more. But if he shuts his mouth and keeps his tail in the same position, he's saying, what on earth are we going to do next? Mm. I don't like the sound of it. So it's that kind of thing.
So it's important then to understand what your dog is saying. It's not just a book about sort of what you are saying to the dog then, is it?
Oh, no. No, several books have come out, very good ones, called Dog Listening. Mm. And, yeah, that's debatable, you know, whether you're talking to them or they're talking to you. You're talking to each other. Mm. And you understand each other. And the most important point is the one you just mentioned. If you're saying in the sweetest voice, come on, darling, sweetie pie, but your body is saying, I will kill you, they will read the body language first and ignore what you're saying because they're not that stupid. We can be gullible and be swayed by con men. Dogs cannot be conned. Mm. Dogs know. In the Church of England, I always used to use the dog as a guide to the character of the person visiting me. If the dog liked the person, they were all right.
Yes.
And if they didn't, beware, beware. Mm.
Mm. Yeah. It's funny, again, you say that, so they really know because... my dogs, they'll usually come back, but you know, they do cock a definite occasion. They say, no, I'm going over here, there's something more interesting. And I was walking them the other day, and I got them on long lead, and I'd got a bag of, I'd scooped the poop as you have to, and I'd got my bag and my gloves and things, and we were walking along, and I could see what I thought was steam from an exhaust, and I thought there was a car coming, and I was going, come here, and they just, and in the air, come here! And it was just fear of, oh, they're going to get rid of, come here! And they both turned around and trotted back like,
yes.
As good as gold, you know. What? What? And it was that sort of, they absolutely understood, okay, I need to go back now because the back's got to be together, there's something, you know, and as you say, it's...
Yes. Mine, certainly no difference between the I want you to come back and the one you must come back. The must come back is obeyed instantly. And I do raise my voice. I don't do some clever dick stuff. I shout, come back! and they come back. They understand. Yeah.
Now, when you work your dogs, you use different languages, don't you?
Yes.
But do they all understand some commands, like come back, or would you have to stand there shouting in different languages?
No, because of that problem, they all understand common whistle, come back, a stop whistle, which is common to them all, and they all understand in English, come back. They also understand if you're swearing in Arabic, you're cross with all of them. So they understand that too. It's only used for show purposes, that. It's the ability for them at a mile away to say, he's talking to me, or he's talking to them.
Yeah.
No more than that. Yeah. But they all have general. And fear calls are, come back! Yes. Mm. So don't worry about any subtleties at all there.
Yeah.
But they can probably see a very stiff body behind them, you know, and they can feel the vibrations, they can feel your fear. I notice the best communication in the world for a dog, especially as they get old and deaf, is a resounding clap of the hands. And that'll cut through deafness. Whistle won't. Hand signals are probably out because the dog's short-sighted as well. But a clap, I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it sets up a vibration or there's a sting in the tail of it. But dogs always understand that. So maybe a good idea to start training your dog right at the beginning, not only with a comeback, but with a... It goes on, doesn't it? It's like a tuning fork.
Yeah.
And they seem to be able to hear that, even if they're deaf.
Yeah. And I guess also, I mean, I found this with whistle. It's, or just a high pitch, you know, I was just to say my dog's name, really high pitch. And it's just something that you say cuts through immediately.
Yes.
And it's sort of that, oh, attention, and I understand I've got to do something.
In Devon, they used to whistle their commands, but they used to sing them. And it was only when I realised that the man... We used to stand on our hillside, on our farm, and say, oh, Evans is bringing in his sheep. It was only when he stopped and thought about it. Evans is 3 miles away, and we can hear him talking to his dog. And the reason you can hear him talking to his dog is he calls to the dog, tip, 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 and it carries for miles, and the dog can hear it. And even very old dogs that were suffering from deafness could hear that.
Yeah.
Yes. Tip, tip. So singing a call is good too.
Yeah.
I've got right off the subject. I've forgotten what the question was now.
I'll think of another one.
All right.
When we were talking about you know, the woman running after her dog.
Yes.
You know, and when, and I mean, that is a real problem issue, you know, when your dog's getting away from you. And a lot of advice is sort of, you run away from the dog, you know. But what I was thinking was, a lot of the advice that you're given is sort of, it's hard to trust. At the point where your dog is going somewhere else, it's hard to trust. But this, your advice has come from sort of years of experience with your dogs, and it works, doesn't it?
Yes. My whole philosophy about training dogs is, bad things are going to happen. I'm going to anticipate those bad things, and I'm going to have control over the dog at a yard, 2 yards, 10 yards, 3,000 yards, and so forth, and never lose it. What usually happens with dogs is, because there's a point of no return where they know they've got away with it. Now look back at you can see it in their faces, and they're saying, "Yaboo shucks, I beat you, I'm out of your reach." If a dog never understands that it's out of your reach, it will never do it. So I train them to come back at a yard away, 2 yards away, 3 yards away, 4 yards away. At 50 yards, I recognise they're passing that point of no return, but they don't realise that they are, because I've not allowed them to think that. So you avoid problems by building in a reaction to them before they happen. That's the way. So you don't let it happen. Don't let it happen. It's like fighting dogs. If you see a dog that's built to fight, it's going to fight. Mm. And if the man that owns it looks like the dog, they're both going to fight. So avoid them.
Yeah.
Avoid them. Yeah. And that's another important thing about a dog that comes back. A dog that won't come back is going to walk straight into the jaws, slavering jaws of, you know, a fighting dog. Not a good thing.
Yeah.
Match made in hell.
The other thing is, you were saying that it visually is a very easily accessible.
Yes, because when they sell, the agent, I've got an agent and a publisher, and the agent sells the book in any country they can sell it, and they get paid again. I get paid again. It's very good. That's a good arrangement. The Dutch wanted to have pictures of the stage you were going through so they could actually visualise it. And the publishers in England said, no, you don't need that. If you can write well, you can write exactly how to do it. So what I did was, every morning I went out with a tape recorder and I actually did it, spoke, and tried to keep it in the same language that I used for the dog. And it, when I read it back for the first time, I was amongst the most surprised to see that it does work. You can do it, and you don't need pictures. And as they said, which bits are you going to photograph anyway? You know, is this a comic strip or is it a book? So it's accessible, and I think by just reading the words on the page, you would understand exactly what you are being asked to do, or what I'm suggesting you do.
Yeah.
But like all books, there's no great rule. So I wouldn't advise anybody to cherry pick. I'd advise them to follow it all the way through. But if they come to one particular piece and they think, oh, it's much better if I do this as opposed to that, then do this. Do this, because that's your dog and it's you. Two different.
Yeah.
You know, you're not me and mine. So I tried to make it firm, but not so on the line that you don't have any variation. To give you an example, Bendy. If I put my hand on Bendy's collar or on his back, as is suggested in that book, he would not do what I ask him to do because he thinks this is a dangerous moment. Suddenly my master is intent, the grip is too firm.
Yeah.
So what I do with him is pull his ear, flick his nose, touch the back of his head, so he thinks this is the best game I've ever played in my life. Then he'll start to walk exactly as I want him to walk. Maybe later in the next book I'll get down to the stage where I can actually get hold of his collar and he'll say, this is all right. So it's an accessible book, even though it doesn't have any pictures. I'm a bit biased, of course, but it has been read probably at the publishers or a dozen people. So it gets criticised, something rotten.
Yeah.
So if you survive that, the chances are you got it fairly right.
Yeah. And it's not just sort of instructions about sort of how to do the training, is it? You've also included your anecdotes.
Yes, I thought it would be extremely boring if it was just a whole long list of do's and don'ts. So the anecdotes are relevant in every case. I'm talking about there's a lovely story around here about and the point was that you can't take the breeding out of the dog. If the dog was bred for a purpose, and its need to fulfil it will always be there. Yeah. There's a lovely story here, and a farmer lives just down the road who went out one morning and the River Usk had flooded, and he was trying to get his sheep across the low levels, and they were about 10 inches deep, and his dog wasn't powerful enough to drive them. And suddenly a dog came out of the woods, sheepdog, and did a wonderful job of driving the sheep all the way up the lowlands, up the hill and back into the farmyard. And because he didn't know who the dog belonged to, he kept it on the farm for 2 or 3 days while he made inquiries. He suddenly found out that it belonged to the vicar, who lived in the next village. And the vicar said, "Oh my goodness, this dog's too much for me."
Yeah.
Well, because it was. It's a sheepdog. It's not a vicar's dog. Mm. But even though nobody had ever shown that dog how to do it, his mother hadn't shown him, nobody had trained him, he knew he was a sheepdog.
Yeah.
He didn't know it in a label sense, but he knew it in an application sense. I can do this. I am made for this.
Yeah. There's a training we were talking to recently from Dawn Antonia Mitchell in listeners will recognise this name from Bernified Dog Academy, and she was saying they offer classes, they offer retriever classes, they offer terrier classes,
yeah,
so that the owners,
yes,
can understand what is motivating the dog, what does the dog want, what's the dog need, and so you can meet that,
yes,
you know, and sort of, and it helps.
That's a really sensible piece of awareness there, and a great thing to do. For instance, if you're going to train a Springer Spaniel, a Cocker Spaniel, a Labrador, any of the gun dogs, use a dummy.
Mm.
Because they want to find and retrieve. And the finding and retrieve will look after, away from me, come back to me, lie down, give it to me. Effortlessly. Because they'll say, this is a great game. Dogs think in a different way. My daughter came here for Christmas. That's only significant in so much as she said, can I bring my beagle puppy with me? Beagle, alarm signals go up. Nose on feet, you know, cannot resist. And we all stupidly agreed that beagle would sleep in the kitchen. Well, the kitchen is surrounded by windows on each side, directly into the woods. All night long there are foxes and deer and hedgehogs and moles and badgers walking up and down the path. And of course, there's a big stone window ledge. So Binky said, thank you very much for this lovely path you've given me, and ran round the window, sniffing the smells like mad, ate a piece of Christmas cake on the way, a pound of chocolates, knocked everything down, and there were plants all over the floor in the morning. And the quick reaction, the human reaction to that would be, you naughty dog, cuff, wallop, smack. If you stop thinking about it, she was doing what she was bred to do. I am a scent hound. I can smell things in the woods. I must go and do my duty and find them. I will run round this path. It was supplied for me. So when you begin to understand that, I think you suddenly say, well, they weren't bad at all. They were doing what comes naturally. So if you can do that in a training sense, you're laughing. You're absolutely laughing.
I guess the thing is there, you know, what you said earlier about, you know, almost as an owner, your job, I suppose, is you anticipate the things that can go wrong. You know, and you can't always do that, but you know, you can in some way say, okay, let's look at the nature of the dog and the breed of the dog and look ahead and sort of...
Yes, I think if you really love a dog, you're going to make yourself its guardian. It'll guard you at night and in certain places, but most of the time you guard it. Mm. I remember once, you've got to be aware of the dog's problems too. I remember once a dog in Scotland, my dog, bringing sheep down the side of a glen a long, long way away from me, and I whistled, turn right. What I didn't anticipate or build in was the fact that it would take 8 seconds to get there. So he kept running down the hillside bringing the sheep, and on the moment 8 seconds had passed, turned right, and the whole lot went in the river.
Oh.
Now, I sort of anticipated that they were going to need to turn right, and had blown the whistle 16 seconds before, so that you could say, ah, yes, recognise that, I'll do it. Yeah. And then by the time the 16 seconds had elapsed, they'd be exactly in, you know, in line with the bridge. We don't do that. And I think we don't recognise that it is an extreme intelligence that dogs have, but it isn't ours. It's different. Mm. I remember a bank manager saying to me once, gorillas are stupid, he said. They're absolutely stupid. And I pointed out to him that a gorilla may not make too much of a good job in Lloyds Bank.
Mm.
Might not be too good. But equally, a bank manager in Banana Forest wouldn't last 5 minutes. So it's an applied intelligence. And I think that's important that people recognise that. And this book really goes into that a great deal. There's a story in there of a lady who, in Blackpool, I can say it on the radio, but I didn't say it there. I said a northern seaside resort in Blackpool, who said to her dog, whenever it was doing something nice, nasty, naughty, would you like a biscuit? So what's she expecting that dog to do? Mm-hmm. To make the deduction between, hold on, being offered a biscuit means I'm doing something bad. Which one is it? I'll cease to do it. It doesn't work.
No.
Teach them, come back.
Yeah.
And it's much, much better.
Yeah. We've heard a lot about sort of your methods of working with your dog. So do you think we could meet your dogs?
Yes, of course.
You can hear what happened when we met Graham's dogs later in the show. Border collies come in a lot of colours. Black, blue, chocolate, slate, seal, lilac and sable, with tricolour and merle variations. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Crufts 2008 has just happened at the Birmingham NEC in the UK. You know it's a dog show, but it's also an excellent platform to promote important messages. This year, there was a very strong message about rescue. Actor Neil Morrissey was there, and he talked very movingly about his own dog. I asked him why he is supporting the Pedigree Adoption Drive.
I'm doing it because I adopted a dog myself, you know, and I genuinely wanted to give a dog a second crack of the whip.
Yeah.
And I've always loved dogs, and that's why this campaign's so fantastic. You know, try and reduce the figures from 100,000 down to zero as much as possible. And it's a really tough task, you know, and Pedigree, it's their chance to give something back. I mean, obviously, they're a big company owned by Mars, and it's their chance to be able to give something back to genuinely help abandoned dogs on the street. That's where we got our dog from, and that's what... I'd like to see everyone, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a terrible stat, you know, so we've got to try and reduce that. I don't even want to get into the stats about the dogs, the amount of dogs that are put down, but most of these places where you can adopt dogs from have a policy of and there's only behavioural or unnaturally aggressive dogs that would ever have that treatment. They do everything they can to rehabilitate dogs that come into their care, and that's another good reason to be getting involved with the adoption drive, because they will genuinely use the money for good purposes, for all our man's best friend.
The website address?
It's www.adoptiondrive.com.
If you'd like to find out more about the Pedigree Adoption Drive, we have a link to it. Jill Moss has been on Dogcast Radio before, telling the moving story of her dog Bella, whose death from MRSA inspired Jill to found the Bella Moss Foundation, which supports pets and owners affected by MRSA and other serious infections, and of which she is president. She was at Crufts with a new development.
Well, it's very exciting because this is our first year at Crufts as a registered charity.
Yeah, yeah. So you're launching here?
We are. We're launching our charity status. We've been here for the past 2 years as a charitable company, but we've only just got our charity status last month in January. And we're very proud of the fact that, we've worked very hard to get to where we are now to be recognised as a charity.
Yeah, yeah. So... what changes will this make to you, and sort of what are you pushing forward with now?
I think that the battles that I've had in the past with some of the institutions and the veterinary profession, you know, not quite sure who I was and what I was about, I think that we can move beyond this sort of suspicion now that I am actually, you know, founder and president of a charity. It means I've got more support from other charities. I've already had huge support from Dogs Trust and Blue Cross, and it also means we can raise very big money to do some of the projects that I would like.
Yeah, yeah. So you're here getting the message out to the public. And what sort of feedback are you getting here?
It's really interesting because people are so grateful for the fact that, they're being informed about the potential risks of MRSA and other serious infections. They want the information. They want to feel that they can be in control of doing what they can to prevent their animals acquiring these types of infections.
Mm.
I'd just like to say that it's really great to have Mark Abrahams supporting our work, and also, we're very pleased with the way that the Kennel Club have helped us. We seem to be getting a huge amount of support now from so many different people, and we've also got the support of DEFRA for an international conference that I'm organising for June 2009, which is going to bring together human and animal health practitioners from all over the world, researchers and clinicians, to present the latest research, which is going to go a long way to helping practicing vets get the knowledge that they need to protect their practice.
Yeah.
I should say, because obviously we're here in Croft in the UK, but this is a global problem, and you're taking a global approach, aren't you?
This is a global problem. I mean, I do actually deal with every country around the world, emails, and I've actually got USA representatives on board now to help me with the amount of USA cases that are contacting me. The traffic coming through the website is enormous. I can no longer deal with it on my own as it was when I started. And for me, the most important thing is there's not a day that goes by where I don't have a phone call or an email from a pet owner telling me that they've read Bella's story and that they're so touched by my experience and so overwhelmed by what she went through that they're just very grateful for the information that we're putting out and for the support that we're giving them.
Well, the best of luck with the future.
Thank you very much.
Celebrity vet Mark Abraham, who Jill mentioned there, regularly appears on The Paul O'Grady Show and was voted Britain's favourite vet in 2007. We spoke to him about why he supports the Bella Moss Foundation, as well as a new project of his own.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of what Jill's done, and I'm a big fan of what the foundation continues to do.
And what message are you trying to get out to people about MRSA today?
As well as MRSA, it's any infectious disease, really, and I think that we're at a stage now where control is so important and we really need to tackle anything that involves animals for their welfare. So MRSA, you've got, obviously, salmonella, anything like parvo. For me, it all falls into the same category as a vet. And infection control really needs to be tackled. There's a lot of problems out there.
So what do worried dog owners need to know?
I think they just need to personal hygiene in terms of sort of washing their hands after meals and washing their hands between animals, and to tell the children to do that as well. But on a deeper level, it's more the welfare issue of puppy farms and all the rest of it, where obviously diseases are spread and they continue to spread because of poor hygiene. And I think infection control as a whole is so important. And MRSA, what this charity is doing is it's highlighting the most media-friendly bug, which is MRSA, that people can actually relate to, and it's kind of using that to influence the rest of the industry, which I think is really clever and obviously really relevant. So yeah. I think there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of complacency out there, and this is a great way of highlighting that it's not that brilliant, you know.
Okay, now you're also here to promote, was it pet.net?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a bit about that.
It's an idea myself and my business partner Andy have had for about 4 years. Being a vet, I'm constantly getting more and more annoyed and wound up about the vets out there that are charging people a fortune for their pets. Just because it's insured doesn't mean they have to leave with a £300 bill just because they've got a sore paw. And my point was I want to encourage feedback from owners to rate the service they've received from their vets, from their groomers, from pet-friendly hotels and kennels and catteries. So we want to highlight the work that the good businesses out there are doing, the pet-friendly ones, the value-for-money ones, and actually almost shame, but in an intelligent, clever way, the businesses that the corporate thinkers pushing flea product and pushing worming product. So it's really showing the good guys that, you know, and directing more business towards them. So it's called thepet.net. It'll be launching in October, but you can actually log on now and register your interest. And we're going to be collecting reviews soon for hotels and for vets. So when it's launched, it's packed full of information. And it's going to put pressure on every part of the industry to actually raise its standards to give the pet owner the best deal. Because where I'm coming from as a vet, it's symptomatic treatment. And really do things like x-rays and blood tests if you really, really need to. Because if people keep getting these experiences of being charged a fortune, they won't replace their pet. And in 10 years' time, we'll have no pets. So I'm passionate about it, and I want value for money for the whole industry, and also pet friendliness, an end to unnecessary tests and unnecessary diagnostic tests, and really back to basics, because pets have become a luxury item when they used to be part of everyone's family.
So. There's a link to thepet.net on our site. The magazine Dogs Monthly was relaunching at Crufts, and we spoke to editor Caroline Davis to find out why.
Well, the company I work for, ABM Publishing, has recently acquired the title from the previous owners, and our first issue is the April issue, which we're launching today at Crufts, the first day of Crufts. It's a bigger, brighter, better magazine than it was before, and it's hopefully will appeal to a fresh market. We've got something for everyone in there, and we want people to come and see it, and buy it, obviously.
Okay, sounds good. So, what if they buy it? What are they going to find in it?
They're going to find all sorts and stuff that they won't find elsewhere. We have a spiritual healer in there, along with a medium. Not going to tell you any more about that. You'll have to read the article to find out for yourself. We have a kids section in there also for junior handlers, and it's nice and bright and breezy, and it's full of how-to tips, it's full of giveaways, competitions, and we want, you know, the kids to really become involved with the magazine, you know, for them as well, to send in pictures of their pets and their stories.
Sounds great.
And do you have a website that people can have a look at?
Yes, we do. That, again, has gone live today. You'll find that at www.dogsmonthly.co.uk.
Although Dogs Monthly is a UK magazine, you can subscribe from anywhere in the world. So if you like the sound of it, visit the website. If you've seen the show It's Me or the Dog, you will no doubt have been amazed at the transformation Victoria Stilwell brings about to dogs' lives, and consequently to their owners. We talked to her about what she was doing at Crufts.
Well, actually, I'm working with the BBC, and I'm going to be doing a tiny bit of the programme, the live programme, tomorrow between 8 and 9 o'clock. And then we have a great event happening on Sunday that we're going to have an audience of a whole load of people with their dogs. I'm talking to myself and vet Scott Miller about all kinds of health and behaviour problems.
Right, okay. So you're going to be sort of giving advice, or are you going to be demonstrating with the dog?
No, I'm going to be giving advice.
Yes.
But I'm also here, I'm going to be visiting Dogs Trust, and I'm here to do a bit of work with Vets Get Scanning, which is a charity I support, and Dog Theft Action as well.
Right, okay. And you've been to Crufts before. What's special about Crufts for you?
I think, to be honest, I'm not such a show dog person, but what I like about Crufts is that if you want to know anything about a dog, come here, because you can just see every breed, but you also just learn so much as well from the trade stands around here too. Everything you want to know about a dog is right here. Everything you want to get your dog is right here. And even if you don't have a dog, come and learn about a breed if you're interested about getting a dog.
Yeah.
It's the place to be.
Yeah. It is much, much more than just the show rings, isn't it?
Yeah, much more. Because yes, it's not just about dog showing. There's fantastic agility. There's great stuff for kids to learn about dog safety. There's heel to music. There's fly ball. There's just a lot of really fun events.
Yeah. And it's huge, isn't it?
Massive. In fact, my legs are aching because I've only been here 2 hours. No, it is. It's massive. Yeah. So if you think you're going to be bored, it's just about dog, no, not at all. There is something for everyone right here.
Yeah, and wear comfortable shoes, isn't it?
Wear comfortable shoes, which I'm not exactly wearing right at this moment.
Oh, let's check. Oh, right, yes.
Yeah.
The trademark boots.
That's all right, trademark boots. Well, it's the cowboy boots, actually. I live in the States now.
Oh, my goodness, that's a compromise.
Yes, it's a compromise. But wear comfortable shoes because it's going to hurt.
You're going to be on your feet. Okay, well, enjoy the rest of the group.
Thank you.
If you'd like to visit Victoria's website, there's a link to it on the Dogcast Radio site, along with all the other relevant links from our Crufts coverage. And we'll be bringing you more from Crufts in the next show. The Border Collie varies from 35 to 60 pounds in weight. We've seen Graham's dogs perform in one of his amazing displays, but we were eager to meet them, so off we went to the kennels. It was evident from how Graham talked about his dogs. Not only does he know each of them as an individual character, but he also loves each one of them. You may be aware from the noise that we were surrounded by quite a few border collies. 14, in fact.
Yes, they're all in compatible groups. So this little lot here, in the kennel beyond this, there's Megan, who's a loner. She'll eat anybody who goes in with her. Especially boys. And if she's in season, nothing's going to happen. The boys are going to get eaten. It's that kind of thing. So she's a particular type of dog. These two are sisters. Little white one, Cooney, can work sheep like mad, but doesn't know when to stop. Sally's attitude would be, don't give me any work because I'm just a pretty dog. I don't do work. But she's so sweet and adorable that that's just a small price to pay.
Yeah.
And then we've got Muppet here. In the big kennel, he works in Welsh.
Yeah.
He's listening to every word I say, as you can see. Little Polly, genius Polly, looks like her mother. Misty, who had a very, very bad hip. She heard me say Misty, and she can work sheep, but she can't jump because she had her hip reformed by a very good surgeon in Exeter a few years ago. The one that's doing all the barking is Susie. And each one, there's a king or a queen in each of these compartments. So the queen in there is actually in her throne room because she's in season. And Randy Barney is down in the stronger throne at the end. Bob's in there. And then there are three in here too. There's Susie, this one who's doing the thing. Carpet. And there's two boys in there. If I say, Bendy! Bendy! That's Bendy. There's Bendy. He's a rescue dog. And then there's Jack, this lovely white one here with a curly coat. His creator got the colours back to front. Where there should be black, there's white. Little Fady in there. And dear little Fady's lost one of her canine teeth. So she now looks at me like this with a slightly deformed face. Gemma, the queen of this lot, is in the back. She's in season. And right at the very end, in the warm, is Bob, who had a kind of canine stroke 2 months ago. And I try to keep him warm, comfortable, not stressed, and so forth. He's a genius dog, Muppet. Mrs. Lovey-Dovey. She can flirt anybody's mind off the subject, that one. And Polly is looks like her mother. Because she looked like her mother, I figured she'd have some of her mother's intelligence. Maybe the genes would work that way as well. And she's one of the cleverest dogs I've ever seen in my life, so it did work. And that's her sister. The reason they're not together is sisters never should be together. Not in my view. If they're litter sisters, keep them apart. If they're litter brothers, keep them apart. But when they all go out for a walk, I'll open all of these kennel doors and the whole lot will stream down the field. I'm going to get Megan out because Megan's...
They're very focused on you, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, always. Yes, yes.
Because they've, I mean, our Labrador that we've just brought in has sort of ignores us and goes to the new person. Like, oh, this is exciting, this is a new person. But you're... Now, is that because of your training, or is that a border collie trait, or what's that?
I'd say it's a border collie trait. I'd like to claim it as a training thing, but it's a border collie thing. One man and his dog. If they're girls, even more so. But Megan here is, I'm the only trustworthy human being in the world. So if you're with Dad, you're safe. If you're with anybody else, it's dangerous. So, and she's always like this. She's always like this.
They're very fawning with you, aren't they? It's not, I mean, is that a typical?
No, that's not typical. As it says in the book, I don't believe in harsh taskmasters. I believe, for instance, if I was working in the advertising industry like I used to, and the boss is a real pig, I won't work for them. If they're really charming, I'll do anything they want me to do. So I figured that was a good lesson to learn. So all of these are loved to bits. They might be working dogs, but they're cuddled till they go mad. You know, leave me alone. Thank goodness the lights have gone off. No more cuddles. It's that kind of thing. So none of them are treated like working dogs. They're all treated like my friends. Well, that's who they are.
You can see that because as you walk up, they're so excited and they're whining to come out to you, and eyes are on you and paws are scratching. They want you, don't they?
Yes, she's this one that doesn't work is the most loving of the lot. Megan's going for a long walk. Megan, kill, come back, good girl. There's a good girl. Good girl.
Yeah, she's come straight back.
And that one is the most loving of the lot. Little Fatty there. She eats for a career. But even if she doesn't eat, she still gets fat. She's got little joints, not much of a stretch of body, and every pound that goes on shows. But she's such a sweetheart, I really don't care, you know. So what?
It's like myself, some of us put weight on from thin air, you see.
Oh, because I don't. Yes, so do I. I've only got to look at a cake and my belt goes out two notches. Mine's not the same.
Oh, they're beautiful. Graham had mentioned his rescue dog, Bendy, as one that had taken a lot of extra work and who had particular needs. And I asked him to tell me more about him.
Well, we bred him. We had three puppies and we sold the puppies We were living in a rectory, and it had enough of a task embracing 15 at the time, so more would not have been a good thing. And he went away with a man who took two dogs. One he loved dearly, and the other one, Bendy, I think it was too much for him. So Bendy came back a ruin. I don't think he was physically cruel to him. I think he just didn't understand. Bendy came back an absolute ruin. It's taken me 2 years to get him away from his fears. And he's going in the next book. He's going to be the subject of a training routine, which I worked out carefully, which is about playing with your dog as opposed to hardline training. And gradually, he'll be a first-class dog. Madness for a border collie is a fine attribute. You know, I want them to be mad. Yeah. So he's a bit too mad. But he'll come round. He's coming round now. I think people will say when they read the book, why did you wait that long? Well, one of the things that I'm advocating often is wait. Don't do it just because you think it's a good moment to do it. Wait. Wait till it's ready. Then do it. The difference is, if you do it now, you'll be spending all of your time up until the time you would have waited until trying to get it right. If you do it when they're ready to do it, you'll do it in 5 minutes. And I'm quite patient. I'm quite prepared to wait. He can do anything, providing another dog does it first. He can do anything. He'd turn left, come by. So if I put him with another dog who knows what he's doing, he could work sheep right now. He wouldn't realise he was working sheep, but he could work them. I want to get him to the stage where he can do it all on his own and he knows why he's doing it. Yeah. So I'll wait. And as soon as the weather starts getting nice, say April, he'll be down in the woods with me on his own. And he'll gradually, within a week or so, say, I really like this man because he takes me out all on my own. And he'll come round. Then we'll train him. And then that book will deal with his progress through 9 months.
Tell us more about the next book.
The next book, I want to call it Dogs Like Happy Endings. It'll be about rescue dogs, nervous dogs, any dog that's got an obstruction between your mouth and its ear and won't do what you want it to do. You don't just say, this is a bad dog, I'll get rid of it. I'll put a bullet in his head, the old farmer's line. You say, I will understand what's gone wrong with this dog and put it right. And once you put it right, there are no obstructions between its ear and your mouth, and it'll start to do everything you want it. I've found that the most troublesome often end up as the best dogs. If they're too easy, too perfect, they stay that way. I like them to be naughty, bit deranged, and then they start to, as they say with sheepdogs, and I think it would apply to almost any dog, you can take the madness out, but you can't put the inspiration in. If a dog is really passive and just wants to sit on your lap and cuddle you, that's what it'll do all its life. And if you've got a working dog, a gun dog or any of these dogs, you don't want that to happen. With some dogs, having them sit on your lap is a great treat, but my daughter's Beagle, the American grandchild thought it was a bagel, but it's close, will never overcome the lovely stories its nose is telling it. Its nose is saying, come into the woods, my dear. There are wonderful things happening here. You can offer as many blandishments as you like, but that nose training will always win. So it'll be about all sorts of dogs. I hope to go down to the Dogs Trust and work on some of their dogs. That's the plan. And I'd like to work on a whole load of dogs that have no pedigree, no background, nobody knows where they came from, what they are, and so forth, and try and find out. There's also, in this book, a technique where you look at your dog and you appraise the dog. And you can do it. I remember once when I was being trained to work sheepdogs, the lady said to me, what's your dog like? I said, he's strong, bold, strong-willed, obstinate. And she took me aside and said, he is none of those things. He's deeply sensitive. He wants to please you. So I looked at him the next day in a new light, and we started to make strides then. So I'm saying, go out to the woods or a field or the park or whatever with your dog, look at it and say, does it have long legs? Oh, it does. It'll run well. Is it a little fat dog? Yes, it won't run well. Don't try and turn, a sprinter into a long-distance runner and a non-athlete into an athlete. It won't work. Work with what you've got. It's about that. It's about understanding what you've got.
And then you're going to have happier owners and happier dogs.
Yes. Everybody will be happier. It'll be a nicer relationship.
It's funny what you were saying about the madder border collies. Sort of that's what you're looking for. Because when I used to teach, it was the, if you like, the naughty children, or the children that, that displayed naughty behaviour, that would often be the brighter children. And there was that spark there that if you didn't give them something to do, they were the ones that would get into trouble because they'd think of something to amuse themselves. And I think maybe there's something of that in border collies, that there is such a brain in them.
Yes. I think you've got to feed the brain as much as the body. But what you just said about children pleased me immensely because I was one of those children, so, so I like that. Naughty children, yeah. They're being naughty for a reason. They're not being naughty because they have evil as an intrinsic commodity. They're being naughty because you've misunderstood them somewhere along the line. I'm sure that's true. Just like my dad got my intelligence wrong. He didn't recognise it was a different kind.
Yeah.
And that's all you've got to do.
Yeah.
That's quite hard.
Oh, yes.
But it can be done. The other thing is I'd like to say about the book is it isn't an alchemy or a magic Merlin-type thing that I'm the only one that owns. I'm saying everybody in the world can do it. If you go out into the woods in the middle of the night and sit there quietly, two things happen. Your eyes grow as large as saucers and your ears come forward so you can hear every sound of the forest. And all that veneer called human disappears in about a minute. So all you've got to do is get rid of that and start looking at them like another animal. Not saying I'm the master, you are the slave, you're the servant, I'm the superior. Say, what is this I'm looking at? And appraise it.
Yeah.
And once you appraise it, then you know what you're working with.
Yeah.
You can't get 2 yards out of a foot of cloth.
No.
Can you?
No.
Neither will you get 2 foot into a very small thimble. So you've got to understand. And once you understand that, you're halfway there.
It was fascinating to hear what Graham had to say and to see him with his beautiful border collies. To find out more about Graham and his book, The Dog Whisperer, How to Train Your Dog Using Its Own Language, follow the links on the Dogcast Radio site. The Border Collie has been rated the most intelligent dog in the world.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. In New Zealand, a song recently hit the charts that you and I will never hear. Why? Because it's only audible to dogs. Apparently, many dog owners bought the song for their four-legged friends, but the dogs weren't always quite so enthusiastic about it as their people. While some dogs showed no response at all to the song, one dog actually attacked the radio. The good news is that sales of the song raised around $17,000 for charity, and there are plans to make the hit available in the United States soon.
Meanwhile, the UK went dog mad with the doggy event of the year, Crufts. With almost 23,000 dogs descending on Birmingham, the hotel chain Travel Lodge, who was expecting to accommodate over 300 show dogs, had a very special offer. Show dogs are used to the very best. So, the dog beds available at Travel Lodge were super large and came complete with pillow and duvet. Well, I guess even dogs need their beauty sleep.
On day one of Crufts, there were rumours that a super dog would emerge from the utility group and take the coveted Best in Show prize. The rumours grew strong enough to cause bookmakers William Hill to suspend betting on the competition. There was also controversy about the evolving style of the show. Had it become too show busy, or even too entertaining? Clearly the public didn't think so, as over 150,000 dog enthusiasts converged on the NEC. And with almost 20 acres of show space filling up, things became rather cramped.
Finally, the 7 best in group winners were chosen. From the utility group, a Japanese Shiba Inu. From the toy group, a smooth coat Chihuahua. Gun dogs were represented by an American Cocker Spaniel. A Samoyed going forward from the pastoral group, a giant schnauzer from the working group, a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier winning the terrier group, and a beagle taking the best in hound group. The overall best in show was the giant schnauzer, and despite the bookmakers' earlier panic about a super dog, none of these dogs wore a cape, none got changed in a phone booth, and none of them fought crime when not in the show ring.
If you prefer your dog shows a little more informal, and you'll be in the UK on Saturday the 12th of July, then the Cold Wet Nose Show is for you. This new show is a great big dog party and everyone's invited. The emphasis is on well-loved family dogs having fun. There'll be lots of activities to have a go at, and one priority is to raise money for dog charities. To find out more, check out the website coldwetnoseshow.co.uk.
So until next time, that's all from the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
Border collies range from 18 to 22 inches at the shoulder. One of the issues that Crufts 2008 highlighted was the growing or waning popularity of various dog breeds. Apparently, Chihuahuas and Pugs are becoming incredibly popular. Bulldogs are on the increase, while some breeds, such as the Fox Terrier, have been classed as vulnerable, meaning there have been so few registrations of the breed that the Kennel Club fears they may die out. Isn't it funny the way we're attracted to a certain breed while we don't like another? The first training class I attended was run by a man who had been a police dog handler for almost 30 years. He was training a class that embraced a wonderful diversity of breeds. For the trainer, it was bewildering why some of us chose to live with a large Munsterlander or a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier. He frequently expressed his view that if you wanted a soft dog, you got a Labrador. If you wanted a harder one, you got a German Shepherd dog. And that was it. End of subject. When I interviewed the internationally renowned animal psychologist, Dr. Roger Mugford, he gently chided me for then owning two Labradors. He advised having no more than one of any breed, and felt it was a mistake to get stuck in the rut of any specific breed. From his long and varied experience of meeting dogs, he has seen the good qualities of so many breeds and mixes of dog, and considers them all equally wonderful. So why miss out on any of them? His comments started me thinking. The two breeds I live with, Labrador and Bichon Frise, are very different in looks, temperament and attitude. Yet I love them both dearly. They fill different niches in my life, they perform different functions for me, yet they share the same deep place in my affections. There are so many breeds that I would love to experience, from Dachshunds to Basset Hounds to Border Collies, Weimaraners, Irish Wolfhounds and Great Danes. However, I do worry how such a varied pack would get along together. When I interviewed Dr. Stanley Corran, who's a dog expert, as well as being a psychology professor at the University of British Columbia and the director of the Human Neuropsychology and Perception Laboratory, he suggested having different dogs for different moods. It struck a chord with me and enabled me to see that a household that included dogs with different needs and abilities could work. A border collie to jog with, a basset hound to cuddle on the sofa with. So just what is it that makes us such a fan of any breed? Are we superficial enough to like the appearance of a breed, enough to overlook any indications that we might not be able to meet its exercise requirements or enjoy sweeping up copious amounts of shed hair daily? Is it a breed's reputation for loyalty or being a great family dog that snares us? Do we think that a certain breed will fit in with our lifestyle, whether active or inactive? Maybe our favourite celebrity has one, and we just want to follow suit. Whatever the glue is that sticks us to a breed, the bond is often unbreakable. I know many people who would only ever consider owning a dog of a particular breed. I have a suspicion that for many, it's the first dog we truly love that we seek to find again and again in others similar to him. We crave the affection-filled eyes, the paw offered in friendship, the familiar texture of the coat, and the grounding knowledge that no matter what happens, someone loves us and will be there for us. I've met a fair few dogs now, and I have to admit that irrelevant of breed, I've liked a far higher percentage of them than I have the humans I've encountered. From the fizzy, feisty terrier, to the serious, driven-to-work sheepdog, to the bubbly, playful gun dog, to the steady, placid giant. I'm pretty sure I could love them all. That's the magic thing about dogs. They're all wonderful. Oh, P.S. Labradors are the most wonderfulest. Till next time, look after yourselves, and whatever breed they are, your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. dogcast.com. That's DOGCAST radio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny. I'm afraid it's not actually Jenny. She's lost her voice, so it's me again. What do you call a dog detective? Sherlock Bones.